finish your year with your dream kitchen with help from Menards. Clearview Cabinetry offers a selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft close doors and drawers and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Clearview Cabinets and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
So we were talking the other day about how, like, the cities where the prisons are, they include the inmates or guests.
Yeah, before Michelle gets started, I'll tell y'all real quick, like, for example, Red Granite, don't quote me, but they have a city population, I believe it's in the 2,000 range, and there's about roughly, well, last, when I was at Red Granite Prison, there was about around like 900 or so people there. That number, the inmates get added into the total population of the people living in that city. So if there's 2,900 people that say that live in the city of Red Granite, 2,000 of those are actually residents and the other 900 are actually people that are doing time in prison. But they get added into the city's census totals for some reason.
Right.
I believe there must be some kind of benefit for the community or whatever.
So it's actually called prison gerrymandering. There's a word for it. So it's true that for the U.S. Census, incarcerated people in Wisconsin and throughout the U.S. are counted as residents of the location of the prison where they're confined, not counted where they lived before incarceration. This practice affects Wisconsin cities and counties that host prisons because it increases their official populations on paper, even though most incarcerated people cannot vote and typically have little connection to the local community that they're counted in. The U.S. Census Bureau counts incarcerated people at their prison location for the decennial census. This has been a policy since the early U.S. Census and continues today. This means individuals in prisons are tallied as residents, even though their usual residence under state law is often their home address before incarceration. Because most incarcerated people cannot vote while incarcerated, this can skew the representation and political influence in legislative and local districts where prisons are located. So, like, when they do, like, for voting, you know, say, let's just say a town of 1,000, or 1,000 is too little. Let's say a town of 5,000, but 900 of them are incarcerated. So there's really only like
1,600.
There's really only 4,100 people that are eligible. Like, and those 4,100 people may not even be eligible to vote. So it kind of like fucks with the numbers a little bit, which is why they said the gerrymandering.
I believe they do get some kind of financial. There's stuff.
Well, it goes towards it goes towards their federal funding, their state funding, like it goes by population. So yeah, it's a scam.
It is big time scam.
So according to the Wisconsin Department of Corrections, data compiled by independent analysts, the total incarcerated in state prisons are about 22,957 people
in Wisconsin.
So roughly 21,395 are male and 1,562 are female. I'm surprised by that number. by the female number. Sorry, ladies. But
we'll have to check those numbers. That seems a little low.
This is as of December 2024.
They're saying there's only 1,000-something women locked up?
1,500 women. I'm surprised at that, but maybe
we'll have to check.
I mean, maybe we're better than we thought, ladies.
Maybe. How many inmates does Tay Cheeto hold? Only a couple. There's really only a couple main women prisons. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then there's smaller. So that number could bear out, but that still seems a little low.
To me, it seems very low.
So they're trying to say over 90% of the prison population is men?
Guess so.
Yeah, we'll have to do some more digging on those numbers. Those numbers seem a little low for the women. I ain't trying to...
I'm also surprised that we are that well behaved. Okay, so examples...
Everyone's doing shit nowadays.
Right, right. I mean, I'm just thinking of, you know, like a lot of women actually get imprisoned for domestic violence, like defending themselves. They end up getting caught up because they killed their abuser.
A lot of times they'll be stealing shit too, though.
Stealing shit, abusing their kids.
Doing
drugs.
Yeah, drunk driving.
Drunk driving. I just watched like 6 of them
tonight.
Fucking
their students.
Yeah. They don't get incarcerated for that.
That shit's crazy.
Apparently.
What is that shit?
Sidebar, because I do have some facts and information on this. But sidebar, why is it men get sent to prison for diddling with students, but women teachers, when they do it, they just get, like, probation and house arrest or something.
Or if they do go to prison, it's always for, like, a year.
It's like, it's like 3 months. But, like, the
and
dude's...
Hoover.
And the dude's locked up, like, for 15 years. It's so weird.
Yeah, that goes into that... Well, that's
kind
of
a double standard, right?
It's kind of like men were looked at as, like...
predators.
Of the genders, we're looked at as the more violent one. You know what I mean? Because it's like, I mean, I would agree, like, I feel like, well, especially now with, like, race stuff is so... I feel like when you get two men together in any kind of space, there's a potential, especially if it's a black and a white person, there's potential for there to be an argument and or a fight.
Yeah.
With men, because we don't deal with our emotions well. I mean, we go off emotion. We don't think things out a lot, whereas women...
I think some women might be like that, too, though.
You know. Some women snap the fuck out. What's that, Eileen Warnes?
Tragic story about her.
Her life was fucked up, but you still can't be... you still can't be...
Can't be running around killing people.
I mean, she was getting treated like shit, man.
Okay, so we're back on track.
Sorry,
now.
Y'all.
Sorry,
we do that a lot.
It's okay. So in Waupun, the population for 2020 in the city of Waupun was 11,344. Of that 11,344, 2,867 were incarcerated people. So, in other words, 25% of the city's counted population were incarcerated, even though they don't live in that community or can vote.
Right. That's just crazy as hell when you think about that.
This means that the prison population made up a big portion of the city's official census count and therefore can affect districting and representation, local legislative districts, and sometimes how resources are allocated, despite the fact that these incarcerated people are removed from their prior home, and they're not benefiting, like, from community support, like, and from state and federal.
And when you're in there, we're getting paid like shit.
Yeah, when you're getting, like, 50 cents an hour.
When I was at Waupun, I was working in the kitchen. Y'all was getting paid 13 cents.
It's ridiculous.
13 damn cents. I mean, I was only at Waupun for 7 months, but, yeah, that's just real. I can confirm all this shit.
Okay, so Bosco Bell.
That's a Supermax.
Okay. So the population of Bosco Bell is 2020 was 3,286 people. Of that 3,286 people, 458 were incarcerated people.
Yeah. I can guess all of the ones you do. So we'll these do that are, one day.
Yeah, so these are just examples that illustrate how prisons boost the official, in quote, population in certain municipalities without representing the community living there outside the prison walls. So counting incarcerated people at the prison location changes how populations are tallied for, like representation, which is state legislative districts, city council wards, political clout of districts with prisons, political or potential allocation of resources, like what state funding they get, what federal funding they get, like that's all the every municipality, their population is factored into that, like how much their police make, how much the fire department makes. Like, the wages is also based on population. Like, I recently did an analysis at my job of population and municipality pay and everything like that. And so, like, that does get factored into that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if 25% of your population actually isn't in the population... They're otherwise contained, right? They're not out and about. They don't benefit from the streets being repaved,
mm-hmm.
or
none of that.
You know, whatever resources that community receives.
And you're using them as a money source, basically, and then turning around and paying them literally peanuts.
Right.
And they're making your license plates and building your furniture and your cabinets and shit that you see in some of these dorm rooms in these colleges. That Jill's sitting on right now drinking her beer. Some inmate made that dresser she's sitting at doing her homework on right now.
I also just don't understand how, like, the, like, I mean, I know it's a thing, but, like, how like, labor laws have not changed. So, like, you know, a regular company.
Who's going to fight for you as an inmate in there, though?
Right. Like,
out of sight, out of mind.
Like, I understand. Let's just use the license plate thing as an example. I know that's kind of a stereotype, but let's just use that as an example. So, like, you're making a product for the state of Wisconsin or whatever state you live in when you're incarcerated. They can dictate their wages however they do. But a privately held company, like a furniture store or a rubber manufacturer or aluminum or whatever, that's a privately held company.
The prison and makes them contract with them.
I know. That's what I'm saying is, like, they're getting the cheapest labor, probably more than child labor, right? Or, like, outsourcing to China. So, like, I just don't even understand how that's fair. And also, it's not even fair to the, like, the victims of the...
Of the crime that was committed.
Of the crime that was committed. Because they're owed restitution, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that comes out of what you earn, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Jane Doe is only getting a percentage of the 13 cents an hour that somebody's earning.
Because the state is using that for their own shit.
Right. So, like, that's a disservice to the victims or the property. You know, say it's not a victim. Say it's a property or a company or whatever restitution a person has to pay back. They got to pay it to somebody or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that's that's not fair to that company or a person either. Because they're only getting a fraction of it.
Yeah, sometimes they don't get all their...
You know
all
what
their
I mean?
Money back. You know what I was thinking?
And like you don't have, say you're in a situation where you're in prison, you don't have family to like put money in your commissary.
You have to get you a job up in there.
Right, I know, but it's only 13 cents an hour.
Well.
Right?
You better start get you a store and start selling it 2-for-1.
Right, but you know what I'm saying? Like
mm-hmm.
they
learn how to cut some hair or something.
So they don't even have, like, a way to do, or, like, to stock up some money for when they get out.
That's why you got to hope you can get to, like, a minimum camp, you know what I mean? Because you can, if you get to a minimum camp, you'll be able to get out and work at, like, one of these factories or, you know, that type of shit. So, obviously, you won't be making real wages, but you'll be making a hell of a lot more than you would doing it, you know, an institution job, per se.
Yeah.
So there are some people that come home, you know, like if you're in long-term minimum, you're in a minimum, say you're there for 3 years, you're going to work, you get out with $10,000-$15,000, you know what I mean? So you'll have a few bucks to get on your feet, but that's not going to last a ton of time because
right.
It may take you a while to get a job and all that other kind of stuff and shit, but... But that's the only way. If you're someone that goes to prison, let's say you get 10 years. You do 10 years. You may you only end up making it to minimum for like a year or something. In them institution jobs, you're making 15 cents an hour working in the kitchen for 10 years. You ain't getting out with very much. And if you owe restitution or anything, they're
right.
taking that. You get money sent in.
Right.
You could have somebody send you in. This is the other cold shot right here. You could have somebody send you in, say someone sends you in 50 bucks, like a family member, so they send you 50 bucks. If you owe shit, the state's going to get their cut.
First.
And then when you get your receipt back, you might only see $20 of that.
Damn.
Because the state's getting all their, there's
yeah.
a percentage they're going to take out. That's why some people, they don't even have money sent in.
For that reason.
You know, I mean, there's other ways of doing that, but I ain't gonna say all that, but.
When you got out, what did you have?
When I got released from prison? Well, they give you, when I got released, they gave me $50. They give you, like, a check
mm-hmm.
for $50, and then the rest gets sent to your P.O., and then they give you the check when you go see them.
Oh, because that guarantees that you check in.
That's part of the reason they do that. But, like, how are you going to give the state my money?
Right, to hold on to.
And you've been taking money out when... Because I used to have money sent in and all that, and I was working and all that. They take... If you owe, they take it out of that, too.
Yeah.
Because you get, like, a monthly statement in prison that shows, like, your printout. Like, you get a monthly... statement for your credit cards or your bank statement.
Yeah,
whatever.
It's like that.
They
okay.
do that in there too, and it shows you all what they took and all that shit and whatever and stuff. But yeah. But
oh,
like
so
and when I got out, like, oh, side note too, like, I know there's talk, like, I hear people saying, it really bothers me when I hear people saying, oh, people that get released from prison getting more resources and getting
no,
more stuff.
Don't.
Thank you. That is a fucking lie. I get sick of hearing people say that shit. I got my job on my own. I didn't have no... When I got released, because you got to go see your PO, like, usually the next day when you get released. When I went there, I've been released from prison 3 times. I've never had a parole officer have resources, job leads, housing, any of that shit waiting on me when I got out. I had to find everything on my own. So that's bullshit. Nobody gave me nothing but what was mine. So I got sick of hearing that shit, man.
And I don't like it when people are like, oh, it doesn't matter if you, you know, are on paper, you have a felony. Like, people can get jobs. No, they can't.
Certain ones. I've had to stick with the same job I've had. I'm, like, waiting to get off parole to start looking for, like, you know what I mean? Because right now, it's like, I don't want to quit. And I don't love my job, but I don't want to quit it right now because I'm scared I won't get anything else.
Right. Because as soon as they do, like, you fill out that application, have you ever been convicted of a felony? You have to put yes.
Get rid of that. Our president's one.
You have to put yes.
Yeah.
So as soon as they see yes, you're at the bottom of the pile. I mean, that's just how that works.
Yeah.
And if you have a sympathetic business owner or empathetic who may have come up from that situation, you know, like maybe they would give you an opportunity, but that's like not that common. But I think that that's bullshit when people are like, oh, just because you have a record doesn't mean you can't get a job. That's crap.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you heard me because you were getting your coffee, but I said, if you have like an empathetic business owner who maybe came up in that situation and is like, hey, I'm going to give this guy or this girl a chance.
Mm-hmm.
That's few and far between.
Right, yeah, that's few and far between.
I mean, you're lucky if you get that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But I just find that is absolute crap when people are just like, oh, you can just get a job.
And
they can't judge you. You're right, they can't.
But they do. Yeah.
And what are you going to call them? Be like, why didn't you give me the job? Well, they're not going to be like, well, because you said you clicked yes. On if you've been convicted of a crime.
That's why I'm just straight up honest with them. When I go in there for the jobs, I just tell them, because you like you said, you can't lie on the application, and I just tell that person right away, because there's these gaps when they look at my employment time. You know, there's these huge gaps from when I've been gone and stuff like that. So that's gonna get asked. So I get out in front of it, and I just let them know, hey, you know, I was incarcerated. I made some bad choices in my life, blah, 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 and that kind of, you know what I mean? That way, like, if they don't want to hire me, then it's on them. But I don't want to lie about it and then have them check.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can be working a place for 3 years or something, and they find out you lied on that, they can fire you right then and there.
They can, but now at least enough time has passed in your situation where you don't have to put that old stuff on there.
And
there won't be a gap.
They need to get rid of that have you been convicted of a felony question. That fuck your president's been convicted more than anyone.
34.
Dude's got more felony convictions than anyone I've ever been in prison with. I don't know anyone that's got 34 felony convictions.
That's what Ice-T was saying on
straight
that one
up.
Clip, yeah.
Straight mm-hmm. the fuck up. And I know some people that have done some foul shit. Mm-hmm. Some real foul shit.
So, yeah, that's interesting information. So.
Is it a crime? Y'all know about that shot. Hey. Let's play some for a few seconds. We won't play too much. They'll be acting funny and shit with the music sometimes. That's what I could never understand, why, like, these websites get all funny about, like, using and playing music and stuff like that. It's free publicity for the artist. Y'all can play about a minute. Ain't give us nothing, nigga. Yeah. Gave us
the less, try and get the most. Stay on some lotion. They gave us the last, we try and get the most. I would wake up so broke, corners be posted. Post up, just stay on some lotion. I was so down and ain't nobody noticed. I was too young to be at them funerals. Bagging up residue all in my cuticle. Life was so ugly, but now it look beautiful. Watching me moving through. Them niggas retarded, don't know what they'll do to you. One thing is stabbing you, one thing is shooting you. I keep my circle as close as a hula hoop. My stomach in knots from eating Chinese every day, nigga, that's what them noodles do. Thought I'd be dead by the age of 19. I've been doing this shit, it might be brand new to you. I needed food on my plate. Young nigga driving a foreign, don't know what to do in a rape. Keep throwing the safe. It look like I'm choking my paddock, cause that bitch is blowing the face. Ain't no feeling awake. Niggas will shoot at your face and jump in the coop and just race. I've been locked in the booth for a day. You asked to get out, niggas moving like train. The field, niggas train and go get it.
How redlining continues to shape racial segregation in Milwaukee. So the 1930s lending map reveals the policy roots of housing discrimination. Leah Foltman, UW Applied Population Lab. Malia Jones, UW Applied Population Lab. This is from February 28, 2019. Milwaukee is one of the most racially segregated cities in the United States, and still is, I added that part. And one of the segregation's most meaningful engines was the historical practice of redlining. Policies limiting the options of prospective homeowners who are people of color shaped the city for nearly a century. Redlining is a term that describes the discriminatory practices of denying minority populations access to equal loan and housing opportunities. Emerging in the 1930s, redlining was embraced in the real estate industry for decades and shaped the social landscape of numerous American cities, large and small. Indeed, the racial segregation patterns of many cities, including Milwaukee, to this day look extremely similar to the patterns set by redlining. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Fair Housing Act, passed in 1968, made discrimination in housing opportunities based on race against the law. However, over a half a century later, racial segregation by neighborhoods remains very pronounced. Looking at the historical practice and legal structure of redlining can shed light on how residential segregation in Milwaukee was birthed and maintained and how it informs current patterns of racial segregation. A New Deal era housing policy. In an effort to promote economic recovery during the Great Depression, the U.S. government implemented several policies through the 1930s throughout. One major policy was the National Housing Act of 1934, which created the Federal Housing Administration. One primary goal of these efforts was to slow down the rate of housing foreclosures, which were rampant as Americans struggled to find and keep jobs during the economic depths of the Depression. During this time, the FHA worked with the Homeowners Loan Corporation, a government-sponsored lending agency known as HOLC, that issued bonds to refinance mortgages for homeowners struggling to keep up. HOLC also created, quote, residential security maps that identify specific neighborhoods as high or low risk for investment. These maps were used by bank and finance entities in making lending and other investment decisions. Based on instructions from the HOLC, the assessors who created these maps systematically outlined residencies and rated neighborhoods based on one of the aesthetics and age of houses, their proximity to recreational facilities and environmental hazards as a characteristics of the people who lived in each neighborhood. Consistent with the overt racism and other bigotries of the era, many of the appraisal questions were implicitly or explicitly concerned with the demographics of the residents, the races, national origins, ethnicities, and religions of the people occupying neighborhoods were part of HLOC's assessments of an area's worthiness for investment. The resulting grading system categorized neighborhoods on maps, reflecting the prejudices of the evaluators and the ingrained biases of the systems as a whole. A 1938 map of Milwaukee depicts how the Homeowners Loan Corporation graded neighborhoods in Milwaukee. The HLOC developed four distinct categories when mapping neighborhoods. These categories were meant to serve as a basis for a financial institution to determine the perceived desirability and risk of investing in a neighborhood. The categories were color-coded: green, blue, yellow, and red. An increasing order of risk and corresponding decreasing order of desirability. I wonder if that's part of the reason, like, you notice how here in Milwaukee, the street signs turn different colors when you get into, like, the better neighborhoods. You notice, like, when you get out to, like, Wauwatosa, the street, like, the street signs are, like, blue.
That's their own design, yeah.
They're blue. But the street would be the same. It would be Wisconsin Avenue, but it would be green here in Milwaukee. Yeah. But when you get out towards the nicer neighborhoods, they're blue all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I wonder if that hasn't. For example, the assessor of Washington High Lines in the suburb of Wauwatosa rated this subdivision as an A based on its status as a highly restricted and exclusive area. He noted that the area had a controlling building committee which permits a wide latitude of discrimination in accepting residents into the neighborhood. Washington Highlands was the first Metro Milwaukee neighborhood to implement specific restrictions on the race of the people who could live there. As described in a 1979 report by the Metropolitan Integration Research Center, when Washington Highlands was developed in 1919, the property deeds of the development specified that, quote, at no time shall the land include a Washington Highlands or any part thereof, of any building thereon be purchased, owned, leased, or occupied by any person other than of white race. Quote, this restriction remained in place until it was made illegal during the Civil Rights era. Wow, they literally have like a picture of a, damn, it's like a document. Wow.
I just think it's crazy that it's like the government dictated who could live where.
Wow, yeah, this shit is crazy. Yeah, that shit is crazy as hell just to keep people out because they don't want nobody. I want to look at that. I want to do look up that about the street signs.
Why it's different?
Yeah, why some street sign? Why
Well, I mean, if it's not in the city, like the city of Wauwatosa has their own design. The city of Glendale has their own design.
Yeah, that's true. How the brain really works, not how we think it does. Your brain decides before you do. Neuroscience studies show your brain makes a decision milliseconds to seconds before you become consciously aware of it. Consciousness often explains decisions after the fact instead of making them. Free will is more like a narrator than a driver. These are just little facts and just little interesting things about human behavior. It says we remember feelings, not facts. Well, you know what, though? I still rather be on the side of facts.
Me too.
You know what I mean?
Me too.
Because that feeling, that's more like how we talk about like going off emotion. And I'd rather not go off emotion. I don't want to make decisions based off emotion. You know what I mean? Because you're going to be on the wrong side of stuff, like just information-wise and just being... Right, just being knowledgeable, like you're gonna be on the wrong side of that if you're just always going off emotion. Yeah, it says we remember feelings, not facts. People rarely remember what happened accurately. They remember how it made them feel. That's why two people can experience the same event and remember it completely different. Trauma reshapes memory, not because people lie, but because the brain protects itself. The brain hates uncertainty more than bad news. Studies show people prefer bad certainty over uncertain possibility. This is why conspiracy theories spread fast. They resolve uncertainty, even if they're wrong.
I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. I'll read this last one, y'all. It says, biases we all carry, even when we swear we don't. The brain categorizes people in under 1 second. Race, gender, age, threat level, all processed before conscious thought. Even people who strongly oppose racism still show unconscious bias. Bias isn't a moral failure. It's a learned survival shortcut. Oh, this one's interesting. I'll do this last one. We judge ourselves by intent, others by outcome. Us, quote, I didn't mean it like that. Them, look what they did. This bias fuels racial double standards, media narratives, and courtroom outcomes. Social behavior and power. Authority shuts down moral reasoning. Classic studies show people will hurt others, break personal values, and stay silent in injustice simply because someone in authority said so. Uniforms, badges, titles, and status literally reduce critical thinking. Yeah. You see that with cops and shit. They get that badge, that gun, that authority. They run around acting like they just run and control everything. And then they're non-approachable.
Right.
Sometimes. Like, and that's the other thing, too. Like, cops, they get trained to be in control of the situation. To basically, you know, when they walk up to the car and shit like that. Like, they're trained to, like, dominate the situation and... You know, and stuff like that. And that's why they get out, like, being shitty to you sometimes. And some of them go overboard with the shit. You know, so, like, how, like, when you're being trained that way, and you're basically being half shitty, you're being shitty to a person basically from the second of the interaction, like, naturally, how do you expect the person you're encountering to just accept that? You know what I'm saying? The cop walks up to your car. Why are you speeding?
Shut the car.
Why? You don't have to be all like that, man.
You don't have to be best friends or anything, but, like, you don't have to be a dick either.
Exactly. And they'll be coming with that foul-ass energy and shit and then expect you not to match it. It's like, damn, man. Yep. We overestimate individual choice and underestimate systems. Humans love blaming individuals and ignoring structure. That goes into systemic racism and all institutional racism and all that shit, white supremacy. Because a lot of times people don't want to, like, believe that.
Right.
Or accept it or listen to it. That's what we're saying. Like, sometimes white people are unapproachable. Because they're the ones that really need to hear that stuff. Because they're the ones that are going to be in position to really change stuff right now. They really are.
Yeah.
Because, like, even black and brown people, like, we don't have the numbers to, like, change things in any kind of capacity. You know what I mean? Yeah, it says we overestimate individual choice and underestimate systems. Humans love blaming individuals and ignoring structure. That makes sense because, like, with black and brown, when we talk about racism and all that shit, like, a lot of white people, they don't even want to hear it. They'll go back to, oh, well, that's how it was back in the day. Things aren't like, no one's a slave now. No one's on, like, and they come with all that shit.
Yeah.
I didn't own slave, like, and I, and all that shit. Yeah, and they just ignore all the stuff. Like, or they'll say, yeah, I know that there's things that, you know, that hamper people, but no, there should be no but. You shouldn't be saying, I know that these things happen, but. Because the but is you're excusing the behavior, kind of like when people were saying, giving Trump the excuse, oh, it's just baked in the cake. That's how Trump is. No, that's not how a person should be when they're running president. And for people to just say that and excuse that, that is a problem.
Yeah.
that people feel that way and they just blow off. You shouldn't be saying, oh, it's just Trump. That's just how he is. No, because when you say that, you excuse all the shit he does because that's just how he is.
And, like, the president of the United States is supposed to be, like, the utmost of everything, right?
Yes.
Like, an example for the youth. What?
Peace and blessings once again, y'all. This is DBJ and Michelle. You've been listening to the Cold World Podcast. We're coming to you from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Spread the word. If you like what you're hearing, you know what I mean? Spread the word. Give us a rating, review, a share, a like, or whatever. You know what I mean? We hope everyone's doing well. Enjoy your New Year's Eve. Stay safe out here. Avoid the drunk drivers. And with that, until the next one, peace. And go do some good for somebody today. And as we were saying earlier, if y'all want to go check out our over 900 episodes, go check us out on Podchaser. They have all of our episodes that we have ever done on Podchaser. All right, y'all. Peace.